If you don't sign in, you really can't hear anything.
Committee will come to order. Members, this morning, if you're not signed on to the board, you will be absent. So make sure that you're on the board.
Are you up there?
You know, we got gypped on our PowerPoint, Representative Benson, so we're going to confiscate this wonderful technology until we get PowerPoint here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, today, we do have a quorum, and so I'm going to want someone to look at the minutes quickly and then make a motion here. And while they do that, let me say that today we're going to take up three bills, all technology-related bill. We're going to start Representative Benson's bill. Then we're going to move on to Representative Winkler and Representative Morgan. It should be an interesting discussion this morning. I am not technology savvy myself, so I hope that we'll have plenty of opportunity to not just hear testimony, but also to ask questions of the authors and do some good inquiry this morning. Representative Heigerken, would you be so kind as to move the minutes of February 20th?
I move the minutes of February 20th.
Representative Heigerken moves the adoption of the minutes of February 20th. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Heigerken. Representative Benson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Please identify yourself for the record. I think you have a motion that you
want
us to consider.
Yes. My name is John Benson. I'm a member of this committee. And I move House File 803 to be recommended to pass and to be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Wonderful. Representative Benson moves that House File 803 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. And Representative Benson, I would add to that a further recommendation that it be referred to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Correct? Please.
I also have an amendment which I'd like to present.
Representative Benson, you have Amendment H.O. 803-A1.
That's correct.
And you wish to move that at this point?
So moved.
Representative Benson moves H.O. 803-A1 to House File 803. And Representative Benson, just a quick description of the amendment.
The amendment solved the problem, which I wasn't aware of at the time, ought to have been. And it has to do with the word smart board, which is a term which is used by a particular company selling these boards, these technology boards. And so in order to avoid aligning this bill in that way, I wish to make it generic, referring to interactive in place of smart board throughout the bill.
Terrific. We don't want to be violating copyright.
No, we do not.
On copyright legalities here. All in favor of the Benson amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Benson, your bill is before us as amended.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm going to speak very briefly because we have a tight time schedule here today. But I do want to mention some things. First of all, I want to thank Jane Kennedy from the Tierney Brothers Incorporated, who brought their technology board down, their interactive board down, for us to use today. I'd like to introduce Kim Haney next door to me here. She's a science teacher at Minnetonka High School. I saw her presentation with Senator Bonoff when Senator Bonoff brought her committee out to Minnetonka, and the display just blew me away. I'm an old-time teacher who started off with blackboards and chalk. I used to love to throw a little pieces of chalk at my blackboard for emphasis, and then I was pulled kicking and screaming into whiteboards and But I have to tell you, this technology is an incredible leap forward. And when one considers where young people are now in their manipulation and experience with technology, this new mode of communication is really a quantum leap over my old blackboards and my whiteboards and my overheads and all the rest that I had used when I was in the classroom. Also, I'd like to introduce Janet Switchikowski. And And Janet, you are
communications director
for Minnetonka Public Schools. So with that very brief introduction, Mr. Chairman and committee, I would like to turn this over to my two presenters.
Representative Benson, we look forward to seeing a demonstration of you throwing chalk at the chalkboard. I think that will be enlightening.
Not at the students, I want to always emphasize.
And Representative Benson, your bill, it's a pretty simple bill. It's a one-page bill. Basically would create a grant program through the Department of Education for application of these interactive boards. Is that correct?
That is correct. And what we're interested in here is the fact that the governor has a technology proposal, and I'm hopeful that this type of technology can be put in the mix and be considered part of whatever technology proposal or bill comes out of the House and Senate this year.
Terrific. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Haney and Ms. Switzkowski, if you can identify yourself for the record and offer us your testimony. We are we don't have a lot of time this morning, unfortunately. We only have an hour and a half meeting, and so we look forward to concise but hopefully moving testimony this morning. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Kim Haney. I'm a teacher at Minnetonka High School. I teach physics. We just wanted to take an opportunity to show you what an interactive whiteboard is and the impact that it's had in my classroom and classrooms around our community. We have found technology is an extremely effective accelerator of learner, as we've introduced this to our staff, it has really kind of been the gateway for technology integration. The teachers in our community that have the smart boards have really just wanted more, and everything kind of ties into the smart board, from digital cameras to being able to use Google Earth presentations for their classroom. So that's really been a huge gateway for our teachers. It's probably had more of a profound impact than any other technology that we've decided to integrate in our district. It also leverages the power of one computer in the classroom. It takes that one computer that's in the front of the classroom and allows every student to be able to engage with that one computer. In 2001, our community decided to run a referendum to try to fund technology integration, and that first referendum failed. And a lot of that was because we were asking our community to fund something they weren't really sure what they were buying. And so in 2002, we added 11 smart boards to our classrooms across the district and really did a lot of talks with the community to demonstrate exactly where our vision was and what we wanted to do. And then the following year, we passed the referendum, and we've been integrating smart boards, and we currently have over 200 in our district. And so I wanted to just take an opportunity to give you a very quick overview of the power of the tool and show you just a couple of the many, many examples of how you can integrate that into your classroom.
While Kim is getting prepared, I'm Janet Switchikowski, Communications Director. We have passed out a CD-ROM, or actually a DVD, to each of the committee members, and at your convenience, if you're interested in seeing where it can be applied in different classrooms, there are 6 or 8 4-minute segments that show it everywhere from special education, high school math, elementary classrooms, middle, etc. So feel free to peruse that on your own.
Okay, just a couple examples of things for all of you with your signage. You can see right here that one of the features of the smart board is actually a handwriting recognition. So I can take some of those names. One of the ways that I've used the handwriting recognition in class is in Microsoft Excel, which is a very powerful feature in science. I have kids put their data into a spreadsheet. So one of the things scientists do is they don't just look at one single sample or just one experiment. They like to look at many different trials and many different cases. And so what the kids will do is they'll click on a cell, they'll come on up and they can write their information in. And then when they click here, you can see that it's going to put that number right into that cell. And then it's going to automatically calculate an average across. So all these kids can immediately see not only their own results, but the averages across every single hour of that day. Another really quick feature that I like to use for physics classroom is something called Smart Video Player. And so in the past, I've put up a physics problem like motorcycle goes off of a ramp at 50 miles per hour, ramp angle at 37 degrees, what's the maximum speed of that biker? Well,
Cool.
Oh, I
can
find little video clips
out
there on the internet. And as I play that...
Don't try this at home, folks.
After the kids, and when I pick up the pen, it's going to freeze that frame. And we talk about, well, what do we need to know? If you want to find out the maximum height of the bike to travel, or how fast they were coming off of the ramp, what would we need to know? Well, one of the things we know is that at the very top, that velocity is going to be zero. And we want to know the angle of that ramp. So I can take a picture right over the top of my ramp video, kind of like John had. And when I come back to my smartphone software, this is kind of like a flip chart. So this is a record of everything that we've done today. And there's a screenshot of that video with my writing over the top of it. Alright, we talked to the kids, what else do we need to know? Well, we need to know the time. So we'll go back and play that video and actually time how long the bike is in the air. And let's say that that time happens to be 2 seconds. And what else do we need to know? We need to know the angle if that bike is 2 miles away. So, in my little gallery, there are a gazillion different tools in there. I can pull out my protractor. I can actually rotate my protractor around. And we can come in here, measure the angle that that biker came off of that ramp, which is about 58 degrees. Talk about what I would have to do to solve that problem. And I won't go through the problem. But we can solve that. And now I have the ability to take all of my classroom notes that I've done and post them right onto my webpage so kids can go back and see all of the different steps that we've gone throughout the day. If they were absent or if they need to go back, get clarification on something that they did. So those are just a couple of the really quick things that you can do. There's endless possibilities. And again, you're just limited by your curiosity. It totally has changed the way that I talk. One of the common questions is,
that's great, but how do you know that this really impacts student achievement? And since we've been integrating smart boards in our community, every single measure of assessment has gone up. And from a personal just physics standpoint, in my classroom, I've taken a couple years of baseline data using a forced motion concept evaluation, which is a national physics test. And they measure the gain. They give the kids a pretest and a post-test. And then they measure the gain. So if a kid had a 40% on the pretest, they could have a possible gain of 60 to get up to 100. So if they went from 40 to 70, they increased 30 points out of a possible 60, which is a 50% gain. Nationally, high school, college, a typical gain in a physics classroom is 10 to 12%, traditionally taught. After we and that's where we were the first 2 years when I gave that pretest post-test out the smart boards. After integrating the smart boards and other technology, our gains went up to 45% the first year and 51% this year. So we've seen a dramatic improvement in student achievement as well.
Thank you, Ms. Heaney. Would you say then that if we try to distill this down to sort of its fundamental magical element, is the increase in assessment due to things like students being more engaged, your pedagogy being changed by the technology? What would be the fundamental core reasons behind?
I think student achievement has dramatically, engagement has dramatically increased. I thought at first when we had them that either the wow factor would kind of wear off, but even those kids now who've had them for 5 years are more engaged. And I think being able to go back now and access that material at any point in time, being able to be at home, or if they're sick. Now I have a lot of kids who, they were gone today, and they'll come back tomorrow. They know exactly what we covered. They'll be able to get the homework, and they stay caught up right away.
I would add to that that there are, thank you. I would add to that there are three fundamental. One is that students are more engaged. Two is that teacher pedagogy has changed.
Kim said to me in the car this morning, I could never leave if I couldn't take my smart board with me to go somewhere else to teach, because I can't go back to teaching without this interactive tool. So the teaching methodologies have changed, and students' brains are wired differently than our brains are wired. And they are more interactive, and they are more technologically savvy, and this tool allows us to reach a variety of learning styles. So you've got the visual learner, the auditory learner, the kinesthetic learner. If they need to get up there and interact with the whiteboard, you're able in a lesson to reach a variety of learning styles at one time.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Ward. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, testifiers. And my question is just twofold. Let me ask the first one. How much does it cost?
Thank you. Our budget figure is about $4,000 for the classroom setup, and we provided some budget materials to House Research and House Fiscal to cost it out for the bill. But you're basically purchasing a projector that is normally ceiling mounted, so the shadows don't get in the way, and then the whiteboard itself.
Representative Ward.
So for each classroom, it's $4,000 for the unit.
Right.
How about, is there any technology constraints on districts that don't have technology available to them? You know, in outstate Minnesota, rural Minnesota, is there any constraints as far as, I mean, I heard you say it's based off of a computer. Is there anything else that would not allow other districts in rural settings or outstate to not have this technology?
I don't think so. Go ahead.
No, it really relies on the power of the tool can be self-contained with the computer, the projector, and the smart board. And it allows it, we found it to be a more economical deployment than providing 30 laptops in a classroom, because you're looking at three pieces of equipment in a classroom instead of one-to-one. Now, both have their values. Both have different, so I'm not saying the laptops are not a value as well. The other key power is the internet capability, and all of our K-12 schools have internet capability at this point.
I have a question from Representative Griley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this would be a question to be answered with this bill or maybe Representative Winkler's bill, but do you have any idea what percentage of school districts or schools in our state have this technology, which seems wonderful, and I'm just awed by it as well, Representative Benson?
I do not.
And also, the second part of my question is how many countries around the world have this technology? Are we ahead in terms of an edge with the TIMS testing, or are we behind?
Can you answer that?
Representative Benson or Ms. Schakowsky?
Yes. I don't have percentage on districts in the state, but there are later testifiers that may be able to address that on other bills. This technology is deployed internationally. Some of our teachers recently participated in an international competition. And one of our autism teachers actually was the North American winner for that. So it is deployed internationally. However, I was surprised to find in China, at one of the leading schools where our exchange teacher comes from, they don't have them. So I think it depends on, you know, the country and the priorities that they put into educational technology.
Representative Gottlob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if any of the testifiers could tell me, one of the things with upgrading technology, and I think it's great we're doing these kinds of things in the classroom, we absolutely need to be using technology to do a better job there. But it's kind of a moving target as to what hardware and software you jump on, because it might get dead-ended. So has there been any analysis of what the longevity of this is, whether it could be upgraded in the future, whether this is the right horse to jump on, so to speak, for the long term?
Excellent question, Ms. Switchakowski.
I would defer that to later testifiers, some of our technology experts that are in the room. We do know in our district's plan, the smart boards have a projective life of at least 10 years, which is much, because it's really, and I'll demonstrate in a minute, it's really the technology behind it is the software in the computer. that drives it. So it's interacting with the software and really just projecting, and then has the touch-sensitive technology behind the outer coating. One of our concerns was, if we put these in elementary classrooms, will students break them? They can take a beating, Damon. Yes. They are designed for a classroom environment, and they are a leader in educational technology.
I'm not sure they can withstand Representative Benson's chalk.
I've given up that practice, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a question. How long does it take a teacher to figure this gizmo out? And and also, does it have a built-in XY coordinate scale, and you can, does it automatic graph for you, or little tricks of the trade like that?
Ms. Heaney.
Thank you. We offer, I mean, you were all, or many of you, were writing right up there and were able to pick up the pen pretty quickly and were able to write on that. We offer our teachers about a four-hour training session early on before they use it in their classroom, and they're able to walk out of there. They walk in the classroom the next day and they're able to integrate it. From there, we continue to offer staff development, and they do a lot of talking with their colleagues to keep learning kind of the nuances that you can do with it. But basically, it's just, you're running your computer from up there. Every mouse click you do on your computer, when you touch on the screen, that's the same as a mouse click. So any software that you run on your computer, you have the ability to use up there. So when I had my Excel sheet set up, I would have to make that manually. But we also use some science software by Veneer and stuff, and that does some automatic graphing. But go ahead. Graphing calculators. We actually have interfaces with graphing calculators right up there. So it basically, any software your computer can run, you can run from the whiteboard.
Representative Wardlaw.
So when a student takes some data on his TI-84 and wants to do a recursive formula to find out if it's exponential or parabolic or whatever, or linear, that will plug into that TI-84? And then you can show what they're doing up there?
Yes. We actually, there's two ways. You can actually have your calculator plugged into the computer and run it up there. You can demo it as a teacher or have your kids plug it in. Or right now we're currently also using some online, or just the Smart View, which is the graphing calculator, but basically run on the computer. So the teachers or students can basically run a large screen calculator right up on the interactive whiteboard and interact with it right there.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Wichikowski.
I would add that one of the video clips you have on the DVD is of the smart board in the math and science classroom. I think it's one of the first menu options, and it demonstrates some of those tools.
It's time for two more questions. Representative Detmer and then Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and testifiers. Can school districts use existing computers and just adding software to their computers to run this system?
Ms. Heaney.
Yes. The software, like Mrs. Switchikowski mentioned, the software, it's the hardware that they keep updating the software. So the software is a free update as often as they make updates online. So it's just a free download for that.
So they can use their existing computers that they have. Okay, how many, one more question. How many?
Representative Detmer.
Excuse me. How many sites can be funded with this $10 million grant money?
Representative Benson.
The idea of this grant is a pilot program, as you see. And the logic behind this is to get this technology out so that the community, the general society, but also the educational society and community become aware of this. If you notice, the bill indicates that we want to make sure that it is geographically spread around so that school districts that may not have the resources to do this can. And I just want to thank the people from Minnetonka for coming out here, because I think their interest and excitement in this new technology has led them to be willing to spend some time with us today. And another thing I have noticed in education when one community has a breakthrough like this, the surrounding communities then get under some pressure to move. And my idea is that we have a pilot project here. Then we can do some careful analysis and evaluation, like the Minnetonka community has already done, so that we do not, you know, waste resources or get communities stretched out before it's clearly accepted as a technology. I think the technology is there. The question is, can we convince our society that this is the way we ought to be trying to go? Lots of times, for those of us who have been in classrooms, we know that sometimes there's a new system which is going to revolutionize education. The first one I remember hearing about was whiteboards, just plain ones, and then after that, or I guess actually before that, overhead projectors were going to revolutionize education. Well, none of them did. But I have to tell you, after 30-some years in a classroom, I think this technology does have that potential. And I think it is doing it and is demonstrating it in one of my school districts.
So, Benson, I do like the the evaluation piece in your bill. I think that is absolutely important. And Representative Detmer, the part of the answer Representative Benson had to do with this equal geographic representation issue, which I think is an appropriate policy consideration for this committee to consider whether it is a policy priority for us to make sure that you have that kind of representation across the state. As many of you can imagine, it's probably a lot easier for some districts, relatively speaking, to take off in a technological front, if you will, and leaving other districts behind. And I don't think any of us here really want to exacerbate a haves and have-not type of situation. We have Representative Dornis, and then I would like to move for a vote on this bill. I know there are some other members. If you really absolutely need to ask a question, just wave at me. But we do have two other bills. The next one, which is kind of a bigger, complicated bill, and I want to make sure we vet that fully. Representative Benson?
One of our top technologists here has just passed me a note. We had a question about, how much could $10 million buy? It comes out to about 2,500 smart boards, and with 343 school districts, it would be 7.3 smart boards per district. But we're interested in seeing that whichever districts might win the award would get a larger number, of course, so that they would have a good opportunity to really put this into effect.
And, of course, Representative Benson, they are interactive whiteboards, I think.
That's right.
Yes. Representative Dornis.
Thank you, Mr. Right. Chair. I was just going to, throw out the idea that members of the committee, I'm sure, do not have stock in this company. And I think the amendment probably answers my question, because I was curious to know if this is the only product available of this type, or are there others? Is that the reason for the amendment?
Representative, I just misspoke here. We did add an amendment to delete the word smart board, which is a company name. So there are other companies that provide these kinds of technology. That's true.
All right.
We're now calling them interactive whiteboards.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other individuals in the audience that wish to testify for or against the bill? If not, then Representative Benson renews his motion. Oh, is there? I'm sorry. Please come down. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record and
good morning.
Offer us your testimony. Good morning.
Thank you. My name is John Hyde. I'm with First Tech. We're one of the competitors of the smart product. First Tech is an Apple dealer, and we're no stranger to education. We've been doing that since the 1970s, and we carry a line of products from a company called Promethean, which is a UK-based company that makes a competitor to this product. We actually have data from school districts around the country that have implemented 1,500 units in a classroom, or in a school district, and 3,300 in another district. So we have some data for schools that are interested in looking at, you know, beyond the pilot, if you're interested in that kind of information. There's a 10-year-old girl that we ran into, and she had a quote, and we've been using it, and I just wanted to share it with the group, and that was, if I can't learn the way you teach, maybe you should teach the way I learn. And it really hit us hard, and so we've been going full strength with this product, this Promethean product that we've been selling, and we really think it's a transformative product in education, because it enhances not only student achievement and student engagement and eliminate tardiness, but it also increases teacher productivity dramatically. And so we're really excited about the product. Someone asked the question, where are we in terms of where these boards are? And if you look at a bell curve, we're at 8% roughly, and the early adopters have really grabbed a hold of this. And something about early adopters, and when you get to 10%, when you look at VCRs, personal computers, DVD players, even sliced bread, at 10% adoption, it goes, the bell curve just skyrockets. And we're at 8% right now. So this technology is really about to take off. And next week, if you're interested, we've got a special event at one of our schools, one of our cornerstone schools here in Town Minnehaha Academy. I've got some invitations if anybody's interested in seeing a competitor to the SMART. Thank you very much for changing the terminology on the branding on the bill. That's fine. It's a new thing, and we just wanted to get our name out there and make sure people knew that there's alternatives as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde. And from the mouth.
Anybody have any questions?
Well, Mr. Hyde, if
I'd very quickly go to a vendor forum and start selling my product, but I want to be making awareness.
Representative Erdahl, very quickly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to know how many Minnesota school districts your product is in now.
We have several schools. I don't want to get into that for competitive reasons, but we've got several schools from Sauk Rapids down to Western Wisconsin. We've got schools. So I can't get into that for specific competitive reasons, but we're out there. There's three of us here today selling the product, so...
Terrific. Thank you for being with us here, Mr. Hyde. And certainly, if you think there is data that we could benefit from, please forward it to us in the committee. And I'd be glad to also distribute information about your demonstration. If you want to forward that to me, I'll get it out
there. Certainly. And this information is on our website, firsttech.com, if anybody's interested.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde. Any other testifiers for or against the bill? If not, the Representative Benson... renews his motion that House File 803 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you to the folks from Minnetonka for coming and demonstrating this wonderful tool. Next we have... House File 988, Representative Winkler.
Thank you. No, it was explained to me. I forgot that. And then it was re-explained to me. Yeah.
Chair will move that House File 988 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Wouldn't want it any other way.
Representative Benz, Winkler, rather, I believe you also have an amendment that you wish to put have us put right away before the committee. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment and an addition to the amendment, which was just, I hope, distributed now, or is going now.
Representative Winkler, is the proper order for us to move the 0066 amendment first?
I presume so, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Representative Winkler, I misspoke. I was working off of an older draft. The amendment number we want to move is 807-0100. The chair will move that amendment for you, Representative Winkler. Now, you do have another amendment, and I'm just wondering what would be the more logical way to proceed with this, whether to explain this amendment or move your other amendment.
I think if we explain the primary amendment first and then discuss the changes.
Correct. Representative Winkler, if you could do that quickly, and then we'll proceed from there.
Although before we begin, I'd like to point out that on line or page 7, line 9, the $20 million figure for task force costs was a typo. It's supposed to be $20,000. Just to try to deal with any issues on this.
Why did you tell us that?
I'm saving us money already. Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Winkler, I'm sorry. Members, if we can keep it down a little bit, I'm having trouble tracking this, and I was distracted by the board being up. You were referring to page 7?
Page 7, line 9 of the amendment. The A7 amendment has a $20 million figure for 2007 task force costs, and the correct figure is $20,000.
Why don't we move, why don't we make an oral amendment at this point to change that figure?
Or is that coming?
Yeah, it's coming, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I just wanted to address that before we got too far through the presentation.
Complicated.
Representative Winkler, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not really here today to talk about technology because I don't think technology is inherently in of its own self valuable in education. I'm here to talk about accountability in schools. I'm here to talk about administrative efficiency and cost savings, and I'm here to talk about the world of the classroom for students. The promise of technology in education is enormous, especially, I think, at this stage in Minnesota. With the debates and the work we've done in testing, we have great opportunities. We move testing online, and we can have discussions about the form that testing should take, but using that as a tool for teachers in the classroom has enhanced tremendously that the test can be taken online. If we can establish a system of electronic student records and do that consistent with safety standards and other issues, we can help those districts who have highly transient student populations address that challenge. They can't change the fact that their students are moving all over, but they can better deal with students as they come into the classroom for the first time, know where they've been and what they need. And if we can significantly improve accountability by moving towards an updated system of accounting for school districts and the state overall, so we can actually begin to compare across districts who's spending what on what types of programs. Just understanding where the money is going across the state is very difficult. In fact, trying to understand how much money in total is being spent on technology is a challenge, just to get that number. And so that accountability is enhanced significantly by technology tools. We've heard a great deal about online learning, about foreign languages, and about the 21st century economy. All of those things are furthered by technology, because if we don't have workers who are prepared to compete in the knowledge economy by having basic technical literacy, which can be acquired through online coursework or through just having access to technology. If we want students to be exposed to Mandarin Chinese, my guess is we're not going to hire a Mandarin Chinese teacher for every single district and school in the state of Minnesota. So many of the goals we have for education can be served through technology. And we can serve the goal of administrative efficiency. And at some point in the future, I don't think this can happen immediately, we can move towards a system of shared services so that many of the core basic administrative functions that school districts perform today can be shared across all school districts so that they can focus on their core mission of teaching and learning. The problem is we are not ready to move to that system right now. We have a patchwork of technology programs and funding across the state. It's inconsistent and, in general, it's insufficient. It's very hard to realize efficiency in technology unless everybody has some basic level of a common platform. And I think it's the inconsistent funding, it is the lack of common standards, and that has led the Education Week publication, Technology Counts, to give Minnesota a grade of D, as in D as in David, for its use of technology in schools, while the nationwide average is a C+. So we have a tremendous amount of work that we can do. There's great promise if we invest wisely. And this bill aims to do that. It basically has two components. One is funding. One is creating statewide technology standards. The standards would be created through a task force of stakeholders, including urban districts, suburban districts, rural districts, regional center-type districts, school district administrators, school boards association, Education Minnesota, the Commissioner of Education, and the Office of Enterprise Technology, which is the statewide IT department. All of these people coming together to deciding what the technology standards should be before we invest a huge amount of money, I think, is a critical part of this proposal. The funding is set in this bill at $100 million, and in fact, which actually comes out at that's about $120 per student in the state. And there are a number of publications and experts who suggest that we should be spending about $138 per student per year in Minnesota, but this is all one-time funding to try to jumpstart the standards that are established for this task force. And the money, the $100 million, is divided into two parts. $40 million would be a one-time per pupil distribution, so it would go out across the entire state, and $60 million would be based on a competitive grants type program so that we can actually start to address some of the biggest gaps in the technology infrastructure and the technology platform that we have across the state. The reason that this is designed this way, my background is in IT. I work at a software company. And the $100 million funding, it's important that it's a large enough number to incent the districts across the state, to incent all the stakeholders to work together and solve these problems in a meaningful way that and resolve issues. Because there's a tendency in IT, and no offense, guys, there's a tendency to turn these into sort of, you know, not issues of what works best, but you know, what's the most moral technology? You know, these become holy wars almost between technologists at times, and it's important to move them in the right direction by offering common standards that they have a role in creating, and by having funding at the end of that process so that they know that the work and the effort that they're putting forth will actually result in some real improvement for their schools. If you, and I'll just close and let them address some other underlying core issues here, but much of the economic strength and growth we've had in the United States in the last 15 years has been because of productivity gains, and much of that has been driven by private sector investments in technology. The public sector, and in particular our schools, have fallen behind. And if we want to increase the productivity, if you will, of our schools, improve the teaching and learning, drive down costs of providing that, the best way to do that is to invest in technology. And this bill attempts us to move down that road. And it is, I think, for that reason in part that the Minnesota Business Partnership supports this bill. And I think it's also why the Minnesota Department of Education is supportive of this bill, and will speak in favor of it from the governor's point of view.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. I think it would be appropriate and necessary at this point to actually move the amendment to put this bill in the shape that you offer it to this committee for consideration. So the chair will move that the AO70100 amendment be adopted. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is now before us. The bill is now before us as you want it to be before us. Representative Winkler, you do have another amendment to the amendment, and I'm wondering if we should just not go ahead. If we should go ahead with that as well. this would be the H0988A1 amendment. We had a discussion yesterday evening with staff here and you and I, and we had some concerns regarding rulemaking, de facto rulemaking activities that were happening in the original or implied in the original bill. And so we've come up with this this approach to it, and I'm wondering if you could speak to the amendment quickly, and then we'll move it, and then we'll finally have the bill in the final shape that you wanted for this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment that you're looking at, the A1 lines 1.4 through 1.8, which is labeled Subdivision 5, is really designed, and we did this in consultation with government operations staff, as well as this committee staff. The idea is to give the task force that is created the authority to create these standards and allow the Department of Education to fund technology programs based on those standards rather than going through a formal rulemaking process, which is about 6 months, which would have to take place after the task force made its recommendations. So we would, if we were going to do that, we'd have a very, I think, a cumbersome process for creating these standards. And this amendment would allow the task force to develop standards and then the commissioner to begin issuing grants and making distributions accordingly.
Members, the chair will move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I don't know if you know the answer to this or if we, I just went up and alerted the governor's staff people, too, from the department with this question, but is this the procedure that we've used with other grant proposals in the past? And the reason I'm asking is because I was concerned with, for instance, QCOMP and how that was implemented by the department compared to the actual statutes. And there was a lot of concern about the guidelines that came out from the department and how they deviated from the actual statute. And there was a lot of angst out in the community, and I was following that through one of our schools applying for QCOMP. And, you know, as a former, one of my first glamorous jobs here at the legislature was to be the chair of the Administrative Rulemaking Subcommittee. And, you know, what the agencies do on our behalf in the way of rules are actually laws that we then get called about. And so it seems to me by going through this process, I would like to know if it's precedent setting, if it's what we do for other things like this. But it seems to me we've given a lot of our power over to the department by having the commissioner appoint the entire task force, and then they can come up with recommendations that will then be implemented, and it will not, I'm not comfortable with, and then they don't even have to go through rulemaking. So could you explain that?
Representative Winkler and also Representative Greiling, we've asked staff to ask our physical staff upstairs or research staff on rulemaking to come down, and perhaps he can help us with this as well. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I can't speak to history or precedent, unfortunately, but I can talk about what this would do. I don't believe that the task force technology standards would be rules in the sense of having the force of law. I think that they would be They establish guidelines that the department uses to fund technology programs that the districts are seeking. And the commissioner does appoint the members of the task force, but I think all but two of those members are appointed from a list of names submitted by various stakeholders. And one way to address the concern you might have is we could prescribe certain public meeting rules or public process or public involvement or public engagement rules for the task force to engage in. But I don't think the net effect of this would be to write rules in the same sense that a formal administrative proceeding would do.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was on a task force for the one task force from the Center for the American Experiment that I ever agreed with the recommendations I was actually on and had a hand in them. And there is no difference between guidelines and rules. Guidelines are rules. And, you know, if you're sending out money based on guidelines, then there's no difference between those and rules. So I'm very uncomfortable with having a sizable amount of money. We have no public process, which is what the rulemaking process is. In order to assure, you know, the other thing we could do is to have the legislature take the recommendations and adopt them as statute and then go from there. But the rulemaking process, you know, I and actually the Center for the American Experiment tried to shorten up where we would guarantee public process and then only have all this procedure that's very time-consuming and costly for thorny rules, but for routine things, have it be much shorter. The legislature did not agree. The legislature wanted to have long, thorny process for every single rule, thinking they would clamp down on the number of rules. Of course, that doesn't really work, because then we come up with these guidelines which are to go around the public process. And but there's nothing different about a guideline and a rule if you're passing out money and regulating schools based on it. So I don't like this at all, and I hope that we'll work on it some more before we get to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Breiling, the intent simply is to have the people who know the most about the subject matter work through a process to come to a set of recommendations that would be more than just a suggestion. And that may, if that is impossible, consistent with rulemaking requirements, then it's impossible. And we could have them make recommendations to the legislature and come back. But I'd certainly be willing to work with you or anybody else to make sure that this satisfies any of those concerns. And my goal simply is to make sure that the stakeholders, the people who know the most about this, are the ones who have a significant role in drafting it, rather than people on the outside. Because I think it's very, very important that they believe that it's the path to making their jobs work better and to have their missions be successful.
Representative Breiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, that's exactly what rulemaking is. You don't have the legislator generalist doing it. You have the experts who know what they're talking about be involved. That's what rulemaking is. And I would urge you to go through the rulemaking process and use the expedited format, which shouldn't take quite as long unless you run into trouble, and then it will trigger the longer process. But I would say if you run into trouble and it triggers the longer process, then we should have the longer process. But if you'd like to work on shortening down the rulemaking procedure, I'd be happy to work with you on that on another day.
Okay.
Representative Greiling, and just for full disclosure, the language around the rulemaking issue really came from my, and largely because as I read the bill as it was introduced, it seemed to me that it begged the question whether this task force was in fact de facto rulemaking. And as I engaged in discussions with Representative Winkler, his goal really was to have a group of folks who were stakeholders around the state have ownership over the process. Seems to me a good methodology, as opposed to having just the commissioner issue a set of recommendations and guidelines or standards that may or may not have ownership across districts. So there's a number of things I think we're trying to balance out here. The standard approach to this would be, as I understand it, to establish a rulemaking procedure here. But then we started bumping into the time issue in terms of trying to get grants out, not having to wait to come back to the legislature or go through the longer rulemaking process. The other option, I think, would have been to just simply totally vest the commissioner with the rulemaking authority and process, which they do have, and direct them to work on this. But then that maybe violated the notion of trying to have this broad ownership and recommendations not just coming from the wisdom of the Department of Education, but coming from broad stakeholders. So there's sort of this balancing type of thing that we're trying to struggle with here. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, or Mr. Chair, I strongly agree with you, and I think your intent is absolutely right. But but I would submit that this amendment, however, does the opposite, because the commissioner, if she is charged with these things, she should have to go through the rulemaking process, and a rulemaking process does involve those who know about it. It's not just the commissioner. It's, you know, bringing in others, and that's the whole process. So you're right about that, but the idea that the conclusion is we give it to the commissioner to appoint and involve, but it's not the rulemaking process, is kind of an oxymoron. You know, I think what you've set up here is very good, and they should just follow the rulemaking process, the expedited form, which shouldn't take so long.
So, Sir Bradley, we do have Mr. Shepherds here from House Research if you still want an answer to your first question about precedent setting. I leave that to you, Representative Greiling.
All right. Did you want to come up?
Well, I'm wondering if you still want an answer to that question.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Shepherds.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I am
good morning,
Mark Shepherd from the House Research Department.
Representative Garland.
Oh, Mr. Shepard, thank you, Mr. Chair. You weren't here when I was asking earlier. I had two questions. One, the first one that we're at right now is how precedent-setting is this going around the rulemaking process to have guidelines, which I was saying before you got here, I did not see any difference between them and rules in practicality.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling and members, first of all, I'm not in any depth familiar with this bill. I just walked in. But as I understand it, the issue would be whether the standards that the task force is setting would have to be adopted as rules by either the task force or by the commissioner. And there have certainly been examples ad hoc where the legislature has exempted particular things that would be rules from rulemaking. So if the committee chose to do that here, it wouldn't in any binding sense be a precedent for anything else. Mm-hmm. It might serve as an example that somebody in a future year might say, we've done this before, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't create any legally binding precedent. So the committee and the legislature could do pick whatever policy you wanted without having a binding effect on anything in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shepard, I don't want to belabor the point because I know we've got a lot of other bills. I can talk to Mr. Shepard about it later. I know the legislature can do whatever the legislature deems appropriate, but I'm going by what would be a good thing to do in terms of public involvement. And I'm going to ask about the QCOMP. Was QCOMP guidelines, did that follow rulemaking or I did ask the department, and if you don't know that, they could perhaps tell us.
Representative Greiling, I'm afraid we may be wandering off topic here. Perhaps is that something that we need to consume committee time at this time with?
Well, Mr. Chair, we will in K-12 because I think it's very instructive what happened with QCOMP not following the law with the guidelines. And the guidelines were more what the governor originally proposed, not what the Senate actually passed. And that caused confusion in the community when we were trying to implement that. And I just would like to know if that followed rulemaking or just was guidelines like this, in which case I think it's a precedent for a bad example for doing what's being proposed here.
Is there someone from the department that can answer the question for Representative Greiling? I'm not seeing any takers, Representative Greiling. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I do have a potential oral amendment to the amendment that might satisfy your concern, and which would essentially that the commissioner must implement the recommendations for standards through the expedited rulemaking process.
Mr. Chair, that makes me very happy. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
And in fact, I have language right here, if staff would be.
Why don't we do this? Let's get your testifiers to offer their quick testimony while we'll have staff work on some language. And Representative Gradley, if you can also work with staff on that, and then we'll come back to this issue. Representative Winkler, why don't you introduce your testifiers, and obviously brevity will be highly appreciated. Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, members, I have with me Patrick Plant, who is the IT director at the Anoka-Hennepin School District, and Doug Johnson with the Mankato School District. I don't know your formal title.
Director of Media Technology.
There you go.
Welcome, gentlemen. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Patrick Plant, Director of Technology and Information Services for Anoka-Hennepin School District, and also representing the State Technology Director's subgroup of MEMO, which is our state technology and media organization. And the purpose of that group, it was founded, of our state tech director's group, for districts to work more effectively together, to collaborate, to set standards, share resources, and work with the department on state initiatives. In a minute, I'll also mention a couple other affiliations as I move through the couple of handouts that I gave you. You're going to hear a bit more in a minute about what, of course, is really important in what we care about doing with technology, you know, using technology for system improvements like online testing or like having more individualized data about students themselves and their learning that's available to teachers, or developing IT literacy skills for students and making them more globally competitive. But for a second, I'm going to touch on some less visible things which are essential to making all those things happen, however, in the background, which are setting standards for things like funding, infrastructure itself, methodology, and even secure data sharing. And so first I'd like to just talk a couple of seconds here about funding. And this chart I gave you, this is an actual chart that was created and is used internally in Anoka Hennepin so that we can track how we have paid for the technology we have in place that students are using. With the idea being, and you'll see it spans a range of 1995 from a bond issue that we had that was voter approved then to this last year. The idea being that if we track this, does it help us to better project or predict how we might be able to pay for technology in the future? And you'll see that there's a range of sources. I mentioned the bond. We've got considerable district and building capital. We've got building fundraising. And then we've got other voter-approved items like a construction bond in 2000. Virtually all of these, including the Microsoft settlement money, are all one-time funds. And the problem with that from a predictability standpoint and planning is many of the initiatives that you get involved with in technology are multi-year. And so projecting out what's going to be available to support, we'll talk about online testing in a minute, a given initiative is critical to the success of it. There are some other things that tie to funding as well. I'm also the K-12 representative to the Office of Enterprise Technology Acquisitions team that has set standards and purchasing strategies. And actually a precursor to that was our state organization memo had worked with the then Office of Technology to create a program for K-12 where districts voluntarily work together to forecast purchases. That was a few years ago. And in the first 18 months of that program, we saved over $1.5 million for school districts above state contracts. That became now, under the Office of Enterprise Technology and Materials Management, a all public sector program. So all cities, counties, divisions of the state, and school districts working together. In a little over its first year of existence, that saved an additional $19 million in purchases. So just to demonstrate that we do like to work together and believe that there are effective outcomes we can get from it. And again, forecasting is a key. If we have predictable funding, districts can better project what our needs will be, and with forecasting, we can get even better dollar savings in negotiating with the vendors.
I see.
The next slide that I'd like to show you is relative to online testing. And this was an informal questionnaire that Anoka Hennepin put together working with our state group, and it's a we had responses from districts that represent almost a third of the student population in the state. And it ranges from the largest five school districts to districts under 500 students. And the question was, there were really three kind of simple questions. Rate from 0 to 5, with 5 being a greatest level of concern, the capacity you have or concerns you have about the ability to deliver the three areas of online testing that have been proposed for this year and next. And what you'll see is what came back is that from an equipment standpoint, almost 90% of the districts ranked that as being close to a 5 or a 4.69 concern, with the most frequent things being either they did not or do not have the technology, period, to meet the requirements of the testing, or that there would be substantial displacement of the use of the existing technology to support learning. An example would be St. Paul School District, where to do the ELL testing, MTEL, they've got over 17,000 students to be tested, and for a couple months they're going to be literally taking the computers out of their classrooms, re-imaging them, putting new software on so they can be used for testing and then put back in. So those are some of the impacts. Another thing that's substantial concern to districts is currently the testing, it's not recommended by the vendor or state to use wireless technology in the testing. Well, that's a concern because much of what is out there in school districts is wireless, because of space constraints. And literally, I can, for example, in Okanopan, we had a case where we had to bring the wireless laptops in, unplug older wired computers. In other words, we in a lab, we double used, locked up two sets of computers in one space to simply conduct the testing. So working through issues like that are of significant concern. Materials, items of that nature, like headsets, are of less concern to districts. Staff and support for the testing is of almost equal concern to districts, to the equipment itself. And then lastly, I mentioned a little bit about data standards. And as we work towards being able to much more effectively have much more information about individual learning, and Representative Winkler already spoke to the mobility issue, it's critical to be able to do that effectively that we have secure standards put in place that we can move data with students as they move between districts. And this is undoubtedly one of the driest subjects in technology, but certainly an important one as well.
Thank you, Mr. Plant. Mr. Johnson.
My name is Chair Mariani, Rosa, and committee members. My name is Doug Johnson. I'm the Director of Media and Technology for Mankato Area Public Schools. I'm speaking here less as a representative of the Mankato schools and more as a representative of MEMO, our state media organization, as of Socrates, which is our regional technology consortium, and as a current board member of ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education. I'm very excited about the proposed legislation, which would offer some standards, and I'm speaking especially in terms of some of our school, our smaller districts in rural Minnesota. There are currently no state norms, no state surveys that I am aware of that compare districts at the current time. But the anecdotal evidence, I think, is very strong that there's a huge disparity of resources and opportunities for students throughout the state. In other words, the students in Rochester may have a very different set of experiences and opportunities than those, say, in a less populous area. And I believe the opportunities that technology offers and the skills that kids need to have in regard to technology are so crucial that our state owes it to our kids to figure out some way to help equalize the opportunities that all children in the state have. I'm going to talk about basically two ways that kids are impacted by technology. One of the things that technology has helped provided our teachers with is some very timely information about where students are at. We use the NWA MAPS assessments where students are brought into a lab, they do testing, and as soon as the teacher walks out of that lab, she knows exactly where all the students in her classes are in any certain skill area. So she's able to go back to her classroom, divide her kids into groups, and offer differentiated instruction to meet the skills of individual students or smaller groups of kids. In order for that differentiated instruction, that individualization to happen, though, the teacher needs to have access to more than just a textbook. She also or he also needs to have access to a wide variety of instructional materials that are particularly suited to that that subgroup of students. They need access to things like the whiteboard that you saw, interactive whiteboard that you saw demonstrated a little bit earlier, as well as reading programs, as well as games on the internet that are instructional in nature and things like that as well too. I think we have to remember that these children today are, as someone mentioned earlier, a different breed of cat in terms of being deductive learners and visual learners, and the technology appeals to both of those kinds of things. The second set the second thing that makes the technology access important to kids is for them themselves to have access to be able to use the technology well. Any set of 21st century learning skills that you see right now will have a technology component to it. The most recent set of ISTE standards, though, might sound a little bit different in terms of the technology. This is what students should be able to do, know and be able to do to learn effectively and live productively in an increasingly digital world. It doesn't say anything about using computers. It says things like how do they use the technology creatively and innovatively for communication and collaboration, for research and information retrieval, for critical thinking, problem solving and decision making, for digital citizenship, technology operations and concepts. We also need to give kids access to technology in school so we can help them use it in a safe and appropriate manner. We need to give them access to online resources that I spoke to earlier. And finally, for a lot of our districts, distance education course delivery is absolutely essential. If you want to offer the Chinese classes that were earlier, maybe not even as esoteric as Chinese, but even a French 3 class or an advanced math class, distance education is oftentimes the only way a number of these rural districts can do that. The problem we have right now, of course, in the state is we have no current consistent funding stream for our networks, for internet access, for our staff and student hardware, for technical support or staff development. This makes planning extremely difficult. It makes us, as Patrick's slide suggested, look and scratch around in a lot of different areas for funding. And there's no state expectations to districts to provide technology resources to our students. And again, I find that upsetting personally. Technology is about preparing students for future success as lifelong learners, and as information problem solvers, and as good citizens of both the real and digital worlds. I hope that the state of Minnesota finds some way to rise to its preeminence in technological use of education use of technology. Back in the late 80s, this was the home of Plato Learning Systems and MEC, and one of the reasons I moved to this state back then was because of the reputation that it had for these kind of innovative things. I'd like to be able to say that I'm proud of being from an innovative state once again. I guess the Migo factor wasn't too bad there. My eyes glaze over. Usually that happens when you're talking about technology. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate your driving up from Mankato to share those thoughts with us. And I think both the gentlemen have framed up very well for us the challenges that we face as a state, as well as some expectations about having state expectations in this area for all our school districts. And, of course, raising the issue of no consistent funding stream, which is critically important in this regard. And Representative Winkler, I think you're offering us not just a way to address the hopefully setting us up for a consistent funding stream, but doing that within an intelligent framework that brings all districts along together involving stakeholders. So I really appreciate that. We have a couple of questions, and we'll want to get back to the amendment to the amendment. Representative Abler.
Just a short comment, and to emphasize what you just said about the consistent streams. If you look at this chart, it actually looks, it's nice as a diverse stream, but it's really a diverse stream, and it's none of these are reliable, ranging literally from bake sales, which is the building fundraising, to a wonderful, nice dollops of money that land there. And I hope you understood from Mr. Plant that when they unhook a wireless system to put it under the old wired system, that you're setting down entire wings of the building during testing times. And so as we look for more testing and accountability, you may actually be questioning the programs you're trying to get more accountability from. So be careful what you ask for. You might get it. So that's part of the problem.
Good issue. Representative Gutlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also applaud this approach. I think we need to, as I mentioned earlier, get moving on technology. We are behind in the state of Minnesota in the education area. I'm wondering in the funding portion of this, Representative, you got $60 million for school technology grants, $40 million for per pupil technology, and you have different formulas for each of those for allocation. I'm wondering why we're not allocating the $60 million at the same on the same terms as the $40 million. Get that money out to the districts.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, and we can discuss what the proper allocation is, but the idea is that we have, for the $40 million as a per-pupil distribution across the state, we have needs everywhere, and there are things that have to happen. But also, we also have to look strategically about where some of the biggest gaps might be. And the bill actually also explicitly permits districts to group together into consortia to apply for some of these grants. So the idea is, if you have the phrase I use is a patchwork of technology approaches across the state, having a grants-based approach in part at least allows you to identify and improve on some of those biggest gaps or differences.
Representative Gutwald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess from my perspective, it would be almost better to have the two numbers flip-flopped in that regard. Then, if you want to do some section-by-section grants, great, but I think getting it out more, as you described in the first part of your explanation, is maybe more important than the other one. and I realize this isn't a Finance Committee decision, but from a policy perspective, that
might
be.
Sure, we will debate it there, Representative Detwald. Representative Demmer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my original question is actually centered around what Representative Grattling dealt with, so I'll let that go. I think we covered
that. I'll come back in a second. Thank you.
The other thing I did have is, thank you, Mr. Chair, we're establishing, and again, this kind of delves into the finance, but it's the policy of how we do finance. There's a lot of one-time dollars here for doing ongoing programs. My concern is, from a policy standpoint, putting something in place through a grant process and then wondering where the money's going to come from after that. From a policy standpoint, is that a process we want to do? And that's one question. Maybe it's rhetorical. I don't know. But a more specific question is how, maybe Representative Winkler or one of the testifiers, how would you... Schools have been working on technology for the last 15 years, implementing different things. There's different consortiums. How would you see a new set of standards blending in with what school districts are already doing? And if they don't comply, do we take things out? Do we, you know, there's also, I noticed there's preference giving to schools who already have a lot of technology, preference giving to schools who have already invested in technology in terms of the criteria that you've established here. What's your vision for how this would be incorporated by schools?
And Representative Winkler, as you answer that question, I'm going to ask Ms. Wagner from the Department of Ed, if she's here, to come down, particularly to help answer the first question that you had. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I'm going to let Mr. Planter, Mr. Johnson address this in part, but the idea is that we have, with so many different types of things going on, we want to establish some basic principles that should be put in place when making these grants, including that those who, you shouldn't be penalized if you have made a significant investment. In fact, that district, Anoka-Hennepin and Mankato, I think, are both districts that have done this fairly well. Maybe they should be leaders in consortia in their areas to invest in similar kinds of technology. And there are a lot of initiatives going on in different places. The goal would be that through a stakeholder process, you identify what are the best parts of that of those initiatives and what's common between different districts and how do we focus on areas where they can actually come together. And eventually over time, I mean, we're not saying that everybody has to do everything exactly the same. The idea is that you create certain standards that people move towards with time. And as to the ongoing, did you want me to address the ongoing versus one-time funding?
Representative Winkler, I'm hoping that Ms. Wagner can help us with that, since the department is supportive of this bill and it's initially based on the department's recommendation. And I think it's appropriate for us to hear from the executive branch its intention and its thinking about sustainability and the use of one-time money and whether that leads to some kind of sustained effort on our part down the line. So, Ms. Wagner, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kathy Wagner. I'm the Information Technology Director for the Department of Education. Representative, the bill initially came about in response to the need to have some standard level of infrastructure in schools to be able to access education software, specifically in this case, online testing, online assessment packages. As we develop and promote education software from MDE, our biggest issue is the unevenness of the environments in the school districts. You've heard some testimony this morning about difficulties schools have with rearranging their environments if they even have an environment that's up to the level to support software access. I believe the issue here is to get every school district to have a suitable number of machines, computers, that can handle the graphic displays that are required with typical education software, as well as to have sufficient connectivity to allow them to access programs that are large across the Internet. So I think there needs to be some one-time funding appropriated to allow schools to come up to speed. What I like about this bill, a couple things. Having, as Representative Winkler has described, some more agnostic IT standards as opposed to saying we have to have X product out there, I think is a good thing. If we can set some minimum standards that need to be established and work towards implementing in the schools so that they can access software, that's positive. The other piece that I like about this is the requirement of a technology audit. A lot of times I think it's easy to look at something and say this looks like a good piece to buy without having a clean strategic plan in place. A technology audit can help focus the strategic goal in this very expensive effort, I think, to equalize the playing field, both for hardware software issues, but also in increasing the user skills, because a lot of this bill really talks about increasing user skills. So turning teachers into power users of education software, but also turning students into power users of education software. So the technology is actually a part of what they do in learning. It isn't building technology, it's using technology to learn. So making that whole piece seamless. So I think the two pieces are in there, and I believe the efforts to make this part of a coherent strategic plan are also in the bill.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just as a general thought, I know there's lots of good things happening out there. Technology changes so quickly and so rapidly. In the 2 years that this would be implemented, Mr. Chair and members, I have a feeling we'll have a whole new outlook on what kind of technology is available and what we have. And a concern I have about a grandiose, here's the way everybody's going to do things type of thing. Number one, you have a lot of districts who are way out ahead in terms of technology. One of my school districts is new. They've got whiteboard technology. They got systems throughout their schools. I think they would probably have some initial concern as to what are you going to tell me I did wrong and how are we going to do it differently. We've already invested all this. Mm-hmm. And then you have school districts that are K-12, 400 kids, and how are we going to implement this and those kind of things? They're doing the best they can with what they have, but their needs are totally different than Anoka Hennepin's needs. So when we look at a grandiose plan and setting standards about how we're going to do this and spend $100 million to do it, I just get concerned from a state policy standpoint. Is that the way to go as opposed to letting consortiums that form on their own and evolve in ways that that really stimulate a lot of innovation? You know, I just get concerned about the top-down approach that this might be. That maybe that's not valid, but that's just a thought I have.
Representative Wakeford.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I'm going to let Mr. Plant kind of address in practice how this would work, and I think it would be a phased approach. But what we're trying to do is create a balance. And the standards do not say that everybody has to have this type of computer and this type of software and use this exact method of teacher instruction in the classroom. The idea is to create some common standards that everybody can agree on and then allow districts to implement those and to create those standards in their schools in their own way.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yours are excellent questions. And what I will tell you is, again, in some of the examples I gave earlier, we are already proactively working together to address setting standards because we know it's in our self-interest to do that. And what I would tell you is that I very much believe, and I believe Mr. Johnson would verify this too, that what districts fervently know is we need a committed, consistent funding stream to get at what we really care about achieving in supporting technology being available and learning. And if we had that, we would gladly work through the issues that you're bringing up to come up with a plan that, as Representative Winkler says, is balanced in how we ensure that we would phase in standards, optimize use of existing expenditures, and come up with ways to address the issues you're suggesting.
Representative Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I would just encourage you to keep the both segments of the bill in there. The one that distributes dollars by per pupil basis throughout the state, and then also the grant process. And I just want to give one example. I walked into a school district right along the Iowa border a couple of years ago, and I asked them where their computer lab was, and they took me to the media center where there were 13 Apple computers that were quite old there. And for their entire high school, that's what they had. So when we talk about bringing, you know, online testing to that school district, or talk about the smart board technology or a number of other things, this school district wasn't even close to being able to meet those technology needs, and they were far behind other school districts around them. And so I really think it's critical that you keep that grant in there so that we can bring some of these school districts that are really far behind their peers in their area up to speed. I think that's critical. So I think you should keep both elements in there. Whether or not it's going to maintain that current dollar amount that you have in there, that's another question, but please keep those in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Welty. I want to come back to the A1 amendments, and I want to thank Representative Greiling, Representative Winkler for working on this. I think we've arrived at a point where there's at least some level of comfort with this. Perhaps Representative Winkler, can you describe where we're at this point with this amendment?
I think you all have the obviously not typewritten version of the amendment. The line 1.4 is now just entitled rulemaking, and essentially what this amendment would do would require that the commissioner go through the expedited grant-making process, and then if there is controversy, to revert to the ordinary grant-making process.
Rulemaking,
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, this is fine with me, and I would just add, too, for Representative Winkler, I just talked with Mr. Shepard. My original suggestion to put some of that in statute as much as possible in case the rulemaking process gets bogged down be another thing to consider next year, working with Mr. Shepard.
Okay. If there's no other discussion, the chair will move then the A1 amendment before you, the written scrawled version of that before you. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. So we have the bill as amended before us. Representative Winkler, Representative Verdahl, I think you have the last question here, I think. Maybe not. You have a question?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, but Representative Gottwald asked it earlier.
Terrific. Thank you. Members, I really appreciate the strong vetting of this bill. I think there are some very important issues, including the rulemaking issues, but also what the big steps are going to be going forward with the use of one-time funding, the sort of possible tension in terms of top-down versus local development of standards. I think it's been a very good and healthy discussion. Representative Winkler, I want to thank you for bringing us a bill that I think really tries to establish a very inclusive framework for our state to move forward in the application of technology in our schools. Members, with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 988, as amended, be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Winkler, Mr. Plant, Mr. Johnson, Ms. Wagner. Thank you. Members, we have Representative Morgan's bill. We do have session at 10. It is the chair's intent to hear this bill, and I think we can get through this quickly. That is my hope. So we will be voting on this bill, so I would ask members, if they can, to stay to vote on Representative Morgan's bill. Representative Morgan, I will move House File 1080. Be recommended to pass. I'm recommended to the Finance Committee with a recommendation to proceed on to the K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. This bill is a technology bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Morgan. Proceed, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1080 is a technology bill that funds funds from the state to the local levels to the school districts approximately $100 per pupil the first year and $99 per pupil the second year. This is one-time money. There is a local control aspect to this bill, and it also accounts for the need for technology training that many districts and teachers within those districts have. The amount of money in the bill was arrived basically due to the governor's proposal, the governor's budget. When the governor's budget was being presented to us in the Finance Committee, and Commissioner Steven was there, did a quick calculation, and it looks like there's about $190 million of one-time money in the governor's budget. $38 million of that is earmarked for technology, and another $150 million to be distributed to certain school districts around the state. And I asked the commissioner, I said, being that $150 million is one-time money, would you agree that it is unlikely that they would choose to spend that money on staffing to reduce classes or to expand programs? And she agreed that it's very unlikely that a school district would use one-time money for that purpose. And I asked her, I said, what recommendations would you have then for the use of that one-time money? And technology was one of her recommendations. So I took that and ran with it, and therefore the amount of money in this bill was born. I think this bill adds an important element to addressing technology needs across the state, as many of you have brought up in questions that you've asked for earlier testimony, and that is the vast differences that local school districts have around the state for technology needs in the classroom and technology training for staff. Some school districts have some serious software needs. Some don't even have computers in every classroom, as Representative Welty indicated just a minute ago, and the computers they do have in their building are very old and out of date. Some school districts may want to start implementing a parent portal for grades and attendance so that parents can more easily access their students' progress in class and making sure that they are actually getting to class on time. Others may want to, may be ready for their staff and other technology needs, may be ready for the interactive whiteboards that we saw Representative Benson and the Minnetonka School District present here. Still others may be ready for wireless laptops or different classroom sets of wireless laptops throughout the room. There's a vast diversity of needs and technology throughout the state. What this bill does is it gives individual school districts and the elected school board members there the ability to make the choices that are best for their students, for their communities, and I think that's there's a great deal of value in that. And finally, just let me say that there is a training component in this. As a teacher, as someone who has heard teachers over and over again say, great, you give me this fabulous new equipment and you give me no time to learn how to use this equipment and to learn how to make effective use, blending it into the curriculum. This bill allows school districts to identify those needs and use this money for those particular needs. So with that being said, I guess I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. We do have a question from Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morgan, what was the amount again?
The amount is just short of $190 million.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I think the goal is admirable. This probably is a very good use of this money. But just so I understand it, the governor had there's $190 million of one-time money that nobody had claimed and the governor had no plans for.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, $38 million in the governor's budget of one-time money was specifically earmarked for technology. The other $150 million was designated for the, I'm not sure exactly what terms the governor used to describe that in his budget, but for schools that have 3 stars or better. What I'm saying is that we can take that $38 million, add it to the $150 million, and spread that evenly across all schools in the state, because certainly all schools in the state have serious technology needs.
All right, thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Are there any further questions from members? If not, the chair renews his motion that House File 1080 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Morgan. Thank you, members, and let's get off the session here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Meeting is adjourned.